deer.
Blog Talk Radio.
Warning, danger. Did I just hear Debbie the Bloop? Good evening. I don't know where I am. I'm lost in space. Good evening. And welcome to Ear House, Only Tiny Radio. I'm Debbie the Bloop. No, I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, here along with
Dave Bigley from Weirdness Really Bad Movie, just from Alliance, Ohio, and the Troll Hole, and Spaceship One.
Yeah.
And we're here along with Debbie the Bloop, 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 Bloop.
No, it is I, Gardagool, Blay, Blay.
Debbie the Bloop, 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 Bloop.
Why this sudden run on Lost in Space, you may ask? We'll explain in just a minute, and it fits right into our theme tonight.
It does.
Does it?
Yep.
Does it?
As sort we, of. You betcha.
As we visit the planets, we've been kind of on a Lost in Space toot, binge, or whatever. And here's, well, here, I'll explain why. We'll just let this soundbite run out.
Okay. And on to the next.
I want to explain something to our audience, okay? This is a very personal moment for me. When I was a kid. My favorite. Exactly. It's nice when you hit the bullseye right out of the gate. In any event, my favorite toy, I kid you not, this is a true story. My favorite toy was the Lost in Space robot. You know, the Remco toy from 1966, and my mother threw it away without asking me. Dwell on that for a minute. So what do I get in the mail from Mr. GTG, that is Garth Thaddeus Ghoul?
Garnstein, thank you.
Garnstein. The Ghoul. Or Gardagool, either way. But, this is the coolest thing ever. It's about what? Maybe 14
10
inches
and
tall?
A half inches tall. 14,
okay,
10, 12.
11
inches.
I don't
11
know.
Inches, it's 11 inches tall, it claims. But you know, well, how guys are, you know how guy robots are always exaggerating. But, yeah.
Exactly. So, it has lights and everything. And I'm going to press its button right now. Hold on. And it's like, and this filled a huge gap in my sci-fi soul. There. Thank you, Gar. Thank you, Gar.
I was glad to provide an entertainment.
Yes. Hey, pass the hankies around the chat room. CW, you're awesome. Fox Bane, hello. GGSI Paper, thanks for joining us live. We got some good...
Wait, this is live?
Yeah.
Nobody ever
we are.
It is now.
That's right. Three, count them, three science fiction tales of space travel and planets and stuff.
Intrigue, maybe?
Yeah. We've got Exploring Tomorrow, 2000 Plus, and X Minus One. Hey, I feel like I'm back in algebra.
Exploring Tomorrow. I made a Google.
Exploring Tomorrow,
Bobo.
Exploring Tomorrow, 2000 Plus, and X Minus One, yes.
Oh, yeah. No, that's right. Okay, yeah. No, I'm sorry.
Yep.
I got hung up on the CBS Radio Mystery Theater. Sorry, folks, that's tomorrow.
Yeah, that's tomorrow.
The ocean of emptiness.
That's tomorrow. The story of my life until I got this robot in the mail. But I feel so damn
having
good
way
about
too much
that.
Fun.
I feel so good about that. While Gar has an emotional relapse, let us move along.
He gets.
No. Okay. That was my favorite show. I loved Lost in Space. And I was so young that the corniness was lost on me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, part of my problem was until summertime, I didn't get to see a lot of episodes because that was the night of my Y Indian guides. We'd get there early to the people's house. It was held in everybody's house. And that would always be on while we were starting our meeting. So I'd get to see the first few minutes of it. And it wasn't until, you know, the summer rerun, I actually got to see the episode.
Cool. Yep, and they just took Lost in Space down from the Roku channel, and my heart is broken once again. But at least I can hear the robot when I want to.
the goof about Lost in Space is Lost in Space. At some point in time, I believe, aired right at the same time as 1966 Batman the TV show.
They may have been up against each other. That would have been
because Batman was
they
on
got
Tuesdays.
Share.
And, I think they were on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Batman, right? And I think Lost in Space wasn't that Tuesday night Might've, still.
I think
Tuesdays
so.
Tuesdays or Thursdays, one of the two. But it whenever it was on. One of the days during the week they were against each other, and Lost in Space was getting market share, you know. Even though Batman was like huge, crazy stuff, Lost in Space was getting market share, viewer isms, if you will.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dave isn't as cracked up about his Lost in Space robot, but he got one too.
Now when I'm away so many hours at work, my robots talk to each other, you see?
Exactly.
So they have company.
I know. Yeah.
So it's great.
Yeah.
It's absolutely wonderful.
Now the next thing I'm going to do, I got to clear out a space on my basement floor because it's the only place I really have. It's obstruction free. I've got like two other battery operated robots and just sit like a little kid in the middle of the room and just watch the robots go at it.
Yes.
There you go.
I have been a toy collector for
people.
Yes, yeah. Well,
Dr.
I'll have to
Smith
send you
was
a car-
celery.
Yeah, I will send you a bag of carrots from Safeway or something like that. You can do what you will with some pipe cleaners or something. Where was I going? I have been an adult toy collector for way too long. And so I've got all kinds of, and from time to time, people go, so, God, do you ever, like, you know, sit down on the floor with your little cars and stuff, Batman, and go, vroom, vroom, vroom. And I say, there's no vrooming going on here in the crypt. But thanks for asking.
Yeah. There's no vrooming?
There's
then
no vrooming not, here.
Then why
you
are you butler?
Do you not,
and when
not,
you say
you
you're an adult
to
toy
or?
Collector, you got to be careful how you say that.
I am an adult toy collector. No, we're not that. Not that. No.
Wanted to clarify.
You leave the heavy breather for later. I saw an interview from the cast on that one. They said it was so corny that they couldn't stop laughing. A couple of them got into some trouble over laughing about the when they did the vegetables thing.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? From what I've read about that, the writers just had absolutely no idea what to make of an episode. So they joked about, you know, turning into vegetables and stuff. And darn if they didn't write that up. It was probably the craziest episode in all of Lost in Space.
And it's a shame because there were some actually very good ones, particularly, I think, in the first season. But there were some later ones that weren't too bad either.
There was a great one where Dr. Smith, because he was being a ninny, like he always is, ate something or drank something without testing, and he grew to this giant proportions, and he was just going to starve to death. And at that point, they should have gone, too bad, so sad, okay, we got to go, bye, you know, and that would have been the end of that. No.
Danger, danger, Will Robinson.
We would have heard that sad music again, though. We can only hear that one.
That felt so damn good. It did. All right, let's move on to radio because we got a lot.
Yeah,
of
let's
it.
Actually.
And, where shall
all
we
do?
Begin?
Sure do. Spin the wheel, Dave. What you got?
How about of these three shows that were all from the 1950s? We do the very first one, which was from 2000 plus, which was the very first. The very first of the, you like to say adult, or what I would like to call it, really the first of the anthology, the anthology science fiction programs, 2000 plus. Mm-hmm. The one thing it actually ran for two seasons. The one thing that does differentiate 2000 plus from all the other anthology shows, they were all original stories, where the other ones were usually based on already published stories. So with that in mind. We could head into 2000 plus.
Episode title is?
Worlds Apart. And it's from?
And the air date is? November 15th, 1950, according to seven people in Oxnox.
Transcribed earlier for release to our West Coast audience at this more convenient
Oxnox?
Listening time. Central Operational Headquarters, Commander Dystra speaking. This morning at 400 hours... our electronic scanners picked up on oscillator frequency an unidentified spacecraft in Sector K beyond the gravitational field of the planet Mars. Our calculations indicate that this craft will arrive in Space Sector G within the next 24 hours. Emergency directions to all defense units. Coordinate high voltage destroyers to cover Area G. All units on alert for assault action. To learn what happened when a strange craft from outer space came into Sector G... listen in a moment to 2000 Plus. Adventures in the world of tomorrow. Dramatic stories of science fiction from the years beyond 2000 A.D. Today, the strange adventure of men who dared the unknown through interplanetary space. Worlds Apart.
And one thing more, Johnson. Your new Alimoid space suit has been tested, and it's everything you claimed it to be. Light, pliable, fireproof, a splendid product. We'll want 50 of them in time for the next space flight 3 weeks from now. Can you make it? Excellent. Good luck, Johnson. Yes?
Your son is here, Mr. Granger. He wants to see you.
Jim here? Well, tell him I can. Oh, all right, send him in.
Yes, sir.
And Miss Ames, tell Robert you can start punching tape for the mechanical pilot on Flight 17.
Yes, Mr. Granger.
Hello, Dad.
How are you, Jim?
Dad, I've come to ask a favor of you. A big favor.
Well, talk fast, son. I'm very busy. What is it you want?
I want to be assigned to Flight 17.
What? Flight 17? To Neptune? Well, are you crazy?
No, Dad. I've been thinking about this for months.
Well, you can stop thinking about it right now. There's no opening for you, son.
I happen to know there is, Dad. Golding's down with a bad case of acceleration bends. They'll need a new rocket engineer.
But you're too young, too green.
I've done 42 experimentals and 3 moon hops. I'm ready.
Ready? Well, this is an uncharted trip, Jim. A trailblazer. You know what happened to the first flight to the moon, don't you?
Yes, sir. Crashed on the lip of a giant crater.
Yes, and the first ship that tried to reach Mars.
Went haywire and shot off into deep space.
And still you want to make this first flight to Neptune?
Yes, sir.
Well, you have courage, son, I'll say that. But you're not going.
Why not?
Jim, it's not up to me. Captain Roberts chooses his own rocket engineer. You know, all I do is okay the man he selects.
Then I guess I'll be making the flight. You see, I persuaded Captain Roberts to select me.
Captain Roberts on spaceship Phoenix on flight to Neptune, calling Marshal Granger, control station 2. Roberts calling Granger. Are we still in contact? Roberts calling Granger. Do you read us?
Granger, control station 2. We read you, Roberts. We're still in contact. Go ahead, Roberts.
Ready to report, sir.
Proceed.
At the end of 120 hours of flight, conditions are entirely normal. Crew and passengers have passed safely through 5 accelerations. We are cruising now at a speed of 12 galactic miles per second.
Excellent, Roberts. Continue.
Astrogation reading. Take it, Sandy.
Astrogator Lawson reporting. Our position in space-time units, 17 hours, 4 minutes to the Mars-Jupiter axis, sector G. 23 degrees off the plane of the ecliptic.
Exactly on course, Lawson. Well done.
Rocket control. Take it, Jim.
Rocket engineer Granger reporting. Average rocket discharge rate, 12.7. Consumption level, 19%. Available supply, 300 hours with B2 safety factor.
Good work, son. Congratulations, all of you. Keep it up.
Thank you, sir. Signing off. Everything okay back in the lounge, Jim?
Oh, quiet a few minutes ago when I passed through.
How about that chess game? Those two physicists still at it?
They're in no hurry. 50,000 miles to a moon.
Real thriller. And the music lovers?
Wearing a groove in Beethoven's Fifth.
You know, I don't see how anybody...
Dick. Yes?
Watch your controls, pal. We've been swinging off course.
Off course? Well, you're nuts, lad. I haven't taken my eye off the chart for a second. We've been right on the line.
I'm telling you, we're off course, Dick. 6 points. Better bring her back.
You sure, Sandy?
Am I sure?
Oh, sorry, Sandy. Stupid question. Stand by for directional correction.
Standing by.
Lateral deviation, 6.2. Speed, 12. Magnetic index, gamma 5.
Port side and auxiliary rockets, 5, 7, 13, 15. Ready to discharge. Discharge.
Well, that's that. I still don't understand.
Wait a minute, Dick. Something wrong.
Huh? Wrong? What do you mean?
We're off again.
What are you talking about?
We swung into line for a second, then we pulled right out again.
Oh, but that's impossible, Sandy. There isn't any wind drift or current out here in space. Anything in motion moves in a straight line until it comes within the magnetic field of some body.
That's what I'm afraid of, Dick. I think we're caught in the toe of some tremendous mass.
Now what mass, Sandy? The sun, Mars, Jupiter, everything's where it belongs, isn't it? There aren't any unknown bodies floating about.
Maybe there are.
Maybe there... Like what, Sandy?
A comet.
A comet?
Yeah, a comet. That's what it must be. A wild, uncharted comet from outer space.
Look, Dick, the atmosphere gauge is way up. We're not flying through a vacuum. There's something else out there now, some sort of atmosphere.
Gas. Hot gases forming the tail of the comet.
You're right, Sandy. Listen. Hot gases and other things, too.
Sounds like pellets of some kind. Stone.
They're fragments. Meteorites. All trailing behind the comet. We're caught, Dick. Caught right in the middle of it.
The ship is beginning to spin.
We'll be dragged clean out of the solar system, perhaps out of the galaxy.
Maybe not, Sandy. There's one chance. Maybe we can blast ourselves free. Alert. Alert. All personnel to emergency acceleration couches. Prepare to discharge all port side rockets.
Do you know what you're doing? 127 rockets going off at once. You'll blow us a bit.
Our only chance, Jim. Here goes. 5 seconds. Discharge.
Hey,
spaceship Phoenix. Granger calling Phoenix. Come in, Phoenix. Granger to Space Patrol. Special alert. Spaceship Phoenix bound for Neptune. Missing 12 hours. May be lost or out of control. All units stand by to intercept signals, if any. Frequency 40,000. Relay any information to Marshal Granger, Control Tower 2. That is all.
Where are you, son? Where are you?
Passengers are dead, but we're out of it, Dick. Something threw us clear of the comet, some centrifugal force.
Help me up, Jim, quick. Give me the control panel.
Take it easy, Dick. All right. Here we go.
Oh, my head. Jim, how's the power plant?
Half the rocket engines are out.
And the boosters?
Seem to be okay.
Good. We got enough to operate on.
Maybe.
What do you mean?
The nuclear overdrive is shot.
Shot?
Smacked by a meteorite.
Jim, we got to find out where we are. We can't afford to waste a unit of power. Do you know anything about astrogation?
Not a thing. Beyond the moon, I'm lost.
Oh, that's great. A crippled ship lost somewhere in space and a dead astrogator to show us the way.
I'll have to make a wild stab at our position. What's your guess, Dick?
Well, how can I guess? We may be near Neptune or way out near some far-off galaxy. Let's take a crack at that radio relay.
I've been trying all along. Can't raise a thing.
Well, keep trying. It's our only chance. I'll take a look through the port, see if I can make out anything.
Spaceship Phoenix calling Earth stations Mars, Jupiter, Earth. Spaceship Phoenix, are we coming through?
Can't recognize a star, a planet, an astro body. Jim?
Spaceship Phoenix, can you hear us? Can you hear us?
How long is it since we blanked out?
Can't say, Dick. All our instruments went haywire. Spaceship Phoenix, flight 17 for Neptune in distress. Are we coming through? Answer us. We may have...
Dick, listen.
Spaceship Phoenix, you are coming through. We hear you.
Oh, we've got him. They heard us.
No, it can't be. Give me that mic. Hello, this is Space Flight 17. We're off our course and badly damaged. Our position, unknown.
We have located your position, Spaceship Phoenix. Stand by, please.
Jim, that's Earth. We're blown or sucked the world right back toward Earth.
Hello, Phoenix. Are we still coming through?
Like music, sir.
Very well. We're going to bring you in on a beam if you're within range. Does the signal reach you? Please acknowledge.
Got you perfectly.
Good. Set your degravitators and disengage all engines.
We're in free flight, sir.
Instruct all personnel to get into acceleration compensators. We'll land at our spaceport in approximately 4 hours.
Ranger to engine room. Landing jet fore and aft. Discharge.
50 feet. Release airlock. Switch on landing lights. 10 feet. Prepare to land. Contact. Cut motors.
We've landed, Jim. We made it.
Don't I know it. Come on, pal. Out you go.
Oh, take your time. We're in no rush now.
You may not be, but I am. In a rush to get down and kiss good old terra firma. Oh, boy, does this air smell good.
What a spaceport, Jim. I didn't know we had anything anywhere that looked like this.
I don't care what it looks like. All I know is that...
Here comes someone.
Hello. Hello there. I'm Captain Roberts of the Phoenix. Are we glad to see you?
Stand where you are.
Hey, what's the idea? Well, you don't understand. I said I'm...
Don't move. Captain Roberts, you and your crew and your passengers are all under arrest. Elfin Smith, take over the ship and seal all the exits. No one is to leave. Captain Roberts, you and your companion come this way, please.
we being held prisoners? I want to know. I have the right to demand to know.
Captain Roberts, you're hardly in a position to demand anything.
Well, what is my position, sir?
The title is Commander. Commander Dystra.
Commander? Commander, you know that you will be held responsible for any harm to my passengers or ship.
There's no cause for alarm, Captain. Or threats. Simply holding you here at Green Valley for a short while till we check your credentials.
You've inspected our ship. You know we carry no contraband. Since when does an American have to have his credentials checked in his own country?
I've already explained to you that this entire area, all 500 square miles of it, is government property, devoted exclusively to secret research projects. Now, is it perfectly obvious why we can't allow you and your passengers to walk about freely?
Maybe, but it isn't obvious why we're not allowed to use the visiphone. Why we can't call our base, report our safe landing.
Perhaps not, Captain Roberts. But then, government regulations often are obscure.
Commander Dystra, we were met with guns and suspicion. Now, you say that was because secret research is going on. Yet when you contacted us above the Earth's atmosphere, you offered to bring us in here. Why did you make that offer if you didn't want us here?
Would you rather be back in space, floundering about in your crippled craft? That can be arranged.
You haven't answered my question.
We brought you in for two reasons. First, to save your lives if you turned out to be harmless. Second, because it is our policy to apprehend all craft entering our space sector. We have enemies.
Well, the high-handed methods you use, I can see why.
Not high-handed, Captain Roberts. During your detainment here, you and your company will be accorded full courtesy.
We appreciate your courtesy, but we demand the right to contact Chicago here, now, and on that visiphone.
I'm sorry, that is impossible. Donna.
Yes, Commander Dystra?
Arrange for suitable accommodations for Captain Roberts and his crew. The interview is closed.
Commander Dystra, I...
That is all, Captain! Send out a special bulletin to the Science Institute, to all chiefs of the following departments: astrogation, navigation, anthropology, astronomy. Is there anywhere in this solar system or in adjoining constellations a body known as Planet Earth or America? Is there any community, area, or experimental station known as Chicago?
No place like Chicago that I know of.
Hey, that's my kind of town. Chicago is my kind of town. Chicago.
Oh, God. What have I started? Bloop, bloop, bloop. What have I started?
Bloop, 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 bloop.
Somebody give that bloop a banana or something.
Bloop, 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 bloop. Give him a leaf to Dr. Smith when he was a celery, yes.
Oh, man. Ugh, not that guy. To me, when they first started out Lost in Space, and you knew just how dastardly Dr. Smith was.
Yes.
That had it continued along that route for the entire run, I would have been happy. Because they would have constantly have, you can put that anywhere. They would constantly have been trying to get rid of him, you know.
Yeah,
but you know what? Here's the problem with that. That would have pretty much been the end of the run. I would not have made it, I don't think, through a second season, simply because it lasted as long as it did because of Dr. Smith and his craziness, mm-hmm. and it got so campy. It's because mm-hmm. of Dr. Smith that show continued. So
and specifically, one, Jonathan Harris, it was his yes. his doing, really.
Yes,
he
was.
Took over, and Aaron Spelling let him. It's weird because Aaron Trellin also had things like Journey to the Bottom of the Sea or whatever that was.
Yeah, Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea.
Okay. See, now that whole thing, they did it seriously. No matter how ridiculous it was, it was done.
Oh, no, come on. Those seaweed monsters and things like that. Give me a
Yeah, hug. They started getting nutty,
yeah.
too.
I mean, because that started that started off as a spy espionage. The first year was all about spying
just
and
like
espionage.
Lost in Space, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
And Irwin Allen just went nuts.
he did.
Yeah, and I mean, it's like if you look at Star Trek, because these are the parallels. You got Lost in Space, you got Star Trek, right? And Star Trek was a little more lofty than Lost in Space, but I really think Lost in Space could have been equal to the Star Trek.
I don't know.
Again, it would have been maybe a I don't think it would have made it through a second season if they would have, because everybody would have wanted just to kill Dr. Smith. And so, and once you kill him off, then there's nothing left of that.
Anyway.
let's say 6 months in season one, they kill off Smith. Then the entire family continues on trying to figure out how to get to Alpha Centauri. And they keep running across all these bizarre people, except Mr. Smith. They don't run across him ever again. They leave him, rotting in a ditch somewhere.
But some of those characters were so bizarre because Smith was so bizarre, and they had to have something to compete with Smith. The better the villain, the better the hero, you know, type thing.
Well, agree, but at the same, I really think they could have gone off and the Smith family Robinson, not Smith family Robinson. Now I'm all tongue-tied. The Robinson family could have gone off and discovered different planets, and it would have been amazing. Without
it, could
Smith.
Have, but I just don't think it would have lasted. I mean, even Irwin Allen said when Jonathan Harris complained to him he doesn't think that some of his co-stars are very happy with him. He says they should be kissing your feet. The only reason the show's still on is because of you. You know, so
that was the one thing to tell Jonathan Harris too.
Yes, I know.
Yeah. What's his name? The guy that was the father.
Guy Williams. Guy Williams.
He could have gone off into, version 7 of Zorro. It would have been great.
He did have that great episode where, he was the evil one and he was going evil guy.
Antimatter dad.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
I'm your antimatter dad.
Hey, we got an exciting radio story to finish here, too.
Yes, we do. Bunch of people out there trying to find Chicago.
That's right. As we wrap up Worlds Apart.
That's right. They should have taken a sharp left at Albuquerque. Yep.
They should have.
Ask Dr. Smith for directions. Yeah.
But no, they ended up Worlds Apart in 2000 plus.
Go.
I won't take this lying down.
No? What are you going to do about it?
Think of something. I'm certainly not going to sit around twiddling my thumbs while the great Dystra checks our credentials.
I don't like the looks of this place any better than you do. Secret project, he says. For all we know, it may be the headquarters of some gangster out there.
There are a lot of things about this Green Valley setup that bother me. Nothing definite. I just get a feeling that everything's a little lopsided. As if I were looking at it through a Coney Island mirror.
Oh, easy now, Jim. You'll be going bats if you...
Dick, I've got it.
Got what?
That visiphone. If we can get into Dystra's office some way, we can phone home.
Oh, no. You're way off, Jim. There isn't a chance in a million.
Why not? This room's not locked. They finished work for the day. We saw everybody leave.
All right. We'll try it. But, Jim, watch your step with you. I feel sort of responsible for you.
Far so good.
Try the door.
Open.
Inside fast. It's very dark in here.
Now, where was that visiphone?
It's right here. Put the call in, but don't light the scanning cone. I'll use this pocket flash.
You listen for anyone approaching. Here goes.
call, please?
Get me Marshall Granger in Chicago.
Chicago? Where is that?
Chicago, Illinois, USA. Come on, operator.
USA? What place is that near?
Didn't you hear me? I said USA.
I will check it, sir. If you...
Someone's coming, Jim. Drop it quick. We'd better get out. There's two ladies in the car to stand back here in the corner.
Hello? Hello? Someone is here. Please come forward. I know you are here. I can hear your heartbeats. There are two of you there in the back. Please come forward. Oh, this is very childish. Now, that is better. Now we can put on the lights.
Good evening, Commander Dystro.
Captain Roberts.
Congratulations, sir. A very impressive trick, hearing a heartbeat across a 40-foot room.
Trick? Not at all, sir. If it seems strange to you, your hearing must be impaired.
You know why we're here, I suppose.
It's obvious. We're trying to use the visiphone against orders. You gentlemen have abused your privileges as guests. From now on, you will be held prisoners under lock and key.
I've brought you your food, gentlemen.
It's about time.
Wow, this is a fancy touch. A woman jailer.
My name is Donna, Captain Roberts. I'm Commander Dystra's assistant. We just remembered you hadn't had any food tonight.
That's very touching. Thank you very much.
Take it easy, Jim. She's just carrying out orders. Donna, it was very kind of you to bring us this food, but there's something we need even more.
Well, what is it?
We need some information. We're going mad.
Well, if there's anything I can tell you...
Anything. You can start talking now and continue all night. First, where is this place? Where are we?
You're in Green Valley, Captain.
Green Valley, Green Valley. Where is Green Valley? What continent is it on? What is it bounded by?
I'm sorry, I can't answer that.
You're wasting your breath, Dick. She won't talk. Then tell me this. How long have you been here?
All my life. I was born here 57 years ago.
You look like 20. How old is Dystra?
92.
And he can hear a heartbeat at 40 paces.
My hearing's even better. Listen. Do you hear the dogs barking in the distance?
Nuts. These people are a terrific culture we've wanted in some weird, out-of-this-world madhouse. Good night, Donna.
Good night, gentlemen. I wouldn't try anything foolish.
Shangri-La. Yes, that's where we must be. The place someone wrote about back in the 20th century. If you ask me,
Granger.
It's probably the place.
Roberts. Dick, listen.
Huh?
Granger. Roberts. The window. There's someone below. Hello there. Who is it?
It's me, Reynolds.
Reynolds, the chess-playing physicist.
Reynolds, how'd you get out? What are you doing down there?
I escaped while the others distracted the guard. I'm making a dash for it.
Dash for what, Reynolds?
There's a small plane at the far end of the field. I spotted it this afternoon. Will you come with me?
It's pitch black out there. You'll never find it.
I'll find it if I have to feel my way.
You're mad, Reynolds.
We've got to get away, Roberts. Don't you understand? This place, it's unnatural. I've seen things that have made my hair stand on...
Now, Reynolds, listen to me. Don't go now. Perhaps tomorrow everything will be...
No, not tomorrow, now. Are you coming, Roberts? Ranger? Very well. When I come back with help, I hope you're still alive.
Now, wait, Reynolds. Come back.
Gone.
Oh, I hope he knows what he's
doing. Dr. Reynolds, you are out of bounds.
That's Dystra.
Come back, Dr. Reynolds. We cannot permit you to go any further. Last warning, Dr. Reynolds. Do not go near that plane.
There isn't a light on anywhere. How do they know where Reynolds is?
Station 7, stop that man.
I think you're foolish to refuse the food we've been sending you. You haven't eaten all day.
Please put it down, Dawn, and go away.
Commander Dystra wishes me to express his regrets. The injury to Dr. Reynolds was most unfortunate.
Tell Commander Dystra he'll pay for this. Tell him I said...
The electronic beam merely paralyzes temporarily. It leaves no permanent mark. Dr. Reynolds will recover.
How did they manage to hit him in the dark?
Well, I don't understand. We see very well in the dark. Well, good night, gentlemen. Please eat your food. Commander Dystra will be offended if you don't.
Mustn't offend Dystra, must we? Well, here goes this tray out of...
Tim, wait. It's foolish, really. We'll only get weak if we don't eat. Too weak to help ourselves if an opportunity comes along.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Feel a little lightheaded already. Hand me that jug of milk.
Here. Pour one for me, Zuda. 3 days we've been here, and he could have checked our credentials a dozen times.
Well, happy landing.
Bottoms up.
Jim, look out. What is it, Dick? Why'd you knock the glass out of my hand?
Did you see the color of that milk? Green.
Green? Green milk?
Poison, that's all I can think of.
Of course. Please eat your food, she kept saying. Come on, let's open that window and get rid of this tray. Here goes. Compliment to Jim Granger.
Well? Well, what?
When is it going to land? I didn't hear a sound.
Did you see it as it went down? That heavy metal tray, that big jug, the glasses, they didn't fall, Jim. They sort of floated down.
As if somebody had messed around with the force of gravity.
They reduced the pull of the earth here at Green Valley, Dick.
Maybe that's one of their secret projects, an anti-gravitational force.
Dick. Dick, I'm going to find out.
What are you climbing up on that windowsill for?
And if it works for a tray full of dishes, why won't it work for me?
I'm going to jump out, Dick. There's only one way to find out. Take a big jump. Just walking around doesn't give the answer.
It's 3 stories. You'll land smack on those rocks below.
Well, if I make it, you follow. And if I don't...
I don't do it. Wait, don't jump.
Hold on, Dick. I'll be seeing
jolt at the end of a parachute jump. I think I'm going out of my mind, Jim. All those fantastic things that have happened since we landed here. The visiphone operator who never heard of Chicago or the USA.
And Dystra, who can hear a heartbeat across the room and see in the dark.
Donna, 57 years old, looking like a chorus girl.
Green milk.
And a reduced gravitational pull.
I don't like it. I want to get out.
And there's our ship out in the middle of the spaceport, prepared and ready to go.
Yeah, maybe we could... Dick. I just noticed something.
Yeah?
Last night it was pitch dark, but now...
Now there's a full moon. What's so strange about that?
Take another look at that sky. There. Over the rim of the horizon.
Another moon. A second moon. What fools we've been. Don't you see what this means? We're not on the Earth at all. We've landed on some alien planet. We must get to Dystra at once.
Yes, that is it. That explains the things that puzzled us. Your reference to Chicago, to the Earth. The small, strange differences between us.
It's not the differences that bother me now, Dystra. It's the uncanny, incredible similarity between your planet and ours.
Is it so incredible, Captain Roberts? We've shown you our astronomical charts. Our planet Vesta is exactly opposite the Earth, on the other side of the sun.
Yeah, that's why we never discovered each other.
We are 90 million miles distant from the sun. You are...
93 million miles. Well, no doubt both planets split off from the sun at the same time. Vesta is a little smaller than the Earth, and that fact, plus its nearer distance to the sun, gives us less gravity, but... Otherwise, our development has paralleled yours completely.
Even in appearance and in culture and language, you've reached precisely the same stage of development we have.
Which simply proves, Granger, that similar conditions may produce the same results.
One thing still bothers me.
Yes?
How do you stay so young, so vigorous?
That, it is simple. We live in peace and harmony. Our only concern is interplanetary threats.
That's why you were so rough on us.
Precisely.
Well, now that we understand each other, may I use your visiphone?
You want to call Chicago?
No. I want to call our crew and passengers and tell them to get ready for the journey home.
adventure from the world of tomorrow, when a scientist crosses the border of what is known into the strange mysteries of the unknown. Be sure to listen.
And be sure to listen to Erie House Radio every weekend, live if you can, in the archives if you can't. Are you still weeping?
Don't play that music again, Dale. Do not do it. Do not do it.
You know not to tell me not to do something. I'm going to be compelled. No, it's actually, isn't it time to learn something from this last episode? All right, here we go.
Bottom up.
Erie House Radio proudly presents
Parma,
a Parma ghoul, Gardegul's moral of the story.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah, you
that's
made
your
moral.
Cue. That's your cue.
You made moral
no cue.
Us now. Yes.
Yeah, there was no cue. Like the little lady with the wand. Okay, here we go. You might not know where you are, but you're never really lost as long as you remember where your piggy bank is.
Hey, there we go.
Hey.
Every day's a party at Erie House Radio.
Parma.
Oh my. Yeah, this show is definitely out of this world tonight, that's for sure.
Yeah, it is.
You know, I find it interesting how 50s, even into the mystery theaters, how it catches up to, you know, a certain time, and here we are, you know, after that certain time, we aren't anywhere near all the technology and stuff that they are talking about in those shows. So,
that's true.
Can I interject really quick on this one? Someone asked this question. Now, this happened. I this happened last week. I know you're having so much fun. So last week I had to do a rebroadcast and of the program. And the rebroadcast was back March 16th, 2020. And someone asked. I know. It's working so good. So someone asked why we don't have flying cars. You know, it's 2020. And my response was, well, you know, maybe we'd have flying cars if we weren't so hung up with remedial hand washing lessons. Yeah, and that was why I didn't.
Yeah, there you go.
Thank you, folks. We need to go on. It's too emotional.
Mr. Robot.
There we go. And it finally ended.
Thank you.
We got a lot of radio tonight. Boy, we
got
I'm using a coat hanger to get Wi-Fi primitive. Okay. No, someone asked why we don't have flying cars in 2020, and I was like, well, if we weren't so hung up with remedial hand-washing lessons, and maybe we'd have our flying cars. But
if you go back to
that point in time.
You know you're in trouble when you have a society that has to put up a sign in the bathroom telling people to wash their hands. Really?
Well, oddly, that sign has always been there. It's just now we're paying attention to it. I've always been there.
I get offended by that sign. I truly am offended by that sign. Because it says...
Well, it says on there only if you're an employee.
It says employees must wash hands. I can wash my own hands. I don't need an employee to wash my hands for me. I can do it.
Well, it's getting a little close.
Honestly,
I can.
Yeah,
They don't want you to hurt yourself, or they'd be subject to a lawsuit. So,
well, you got to step on that.
The employee has to come in and wash your hands.
Wash my hands.
I think we should.
Well, you know, as long as it didn't extend into that toilet paper shortage we had.
Yes. Or we could be exploring tomorrow.
We could be exploring tomorrow.
We could be exploring tomorrow.
Take cash
on the other
page.
That sounds like a genius thing to do.
It does.
I am so upset. Today I went to Office Depot and I forgot to get staples. I'm sitting here looking at paper pages.
Yeah,
but where,
if you would have gone to Staples, would you have forgotten your office? That's the question.
I would have. I would. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So.
A lot of radio.
I got a whole bunch of stuff at Office Depot. I was like, I needed staples. Yeah.
Your coffee supply has been cut off. It's time for exploring tomorrow. This one's called Planet of Geniuses. Certainly no description of Erie House. And it's from?
Yeah, April 16th, 1958.
Exploring tomorrow.
And now, here is your guide to these adventures of the mind, John Campbell.
The term genius is fairly common in our language today. I wonder how many of you realize that the term originated with the old Arabian Nights concept of the genie. You know, the magical creature that came in a bottle and had such wonderful powers. The story is about a whole planet of geniuses. Genie. Interesting people to try to enslave, you know. Laboratory scientists have as much fun as anybody else, you know. One of the laboratory laws, sometimes called Finagle's Law or Murphy's Law, goes, in any laboratory experiment, if something can go wrong, it will. Well, this is the story of a planet-sized laboratory experiment in which something could go wrong.
Excellency Marshal Gorham. The ship is now in orbit about the planet of destination.
Good. Good. Have a lifeboat prepared for descent with an invisibility screen.
Yes, Your Excellency. How many crewmen will you want to take along?
None. There'll be just myself and you, Professor Heim.
Sir, you, the Marshal, landing on a barbarian world without even an escort? I'm begging your pardon, sir, but...
Do you mean that the Grand Marshal of the Galactic Imperial Armed Forces can't carry out an undercover inspection on a backward planet without a dozen Marines clanking in his wake?
No, sir. No, sir.
And please remember that the people down there have no weapon more powerful than a bow and arrow, whereas I will be carrying a nuclear blaster under my coat.
Yes, sir. Of course, Your Excellency.
And while we are down there on that planet, Professor Heim, stand by for possible action. We may have to bombard the place with cobalt missiles. Wipe all the life off it.
Sterilize the entire planet, sir?
You heard me, Professor. I said we may have to. Not that we will. It depends on what I find down there. That peaceful, primitive world may turn out to be just another stupid scientific experiment. Or it may turn out to be the worst danger the Empire and all its stars have faced for 1,000 years. Now, I want you, Professor. I'm in my office at once. Over.
Yes, Your Excellency. Over and out.
Oh, there you are, Professor Heim.
Yes, Marshal Gorham, here I am.
You've arrived at your experimental planet.
I know. I was just watching it float there among the constellations. I don't know a more beautiful sight in the universe.
Well, break out the native costumes for us, too. We're going down.
What?
I am a military man, Professor, not one of your psychologists. Now, so far, your people have spent 1,500 years studying that planet. But as for me, there's war on the Imperial borders, and I can spare 3 days.
3 days to decide?
To decide whether we can let your experiment go on or whether to discontinue it, shall I say?
But only 3 days? Marshal, you don't realize that it would take a week just to explain the statistics of...
I know, I've heard it all. 1,500 years ago, the Psychological Research Foundation decided to learn what makes human history tick by running controlled experiments. So it took a lot of uninhabited planets and put different kinds of people on them.
Well, their memories wiped out, Marshal. The first generation started out knowing as little as animals. They had to discover everything for themselves. Fire, language, the wheel. Do you imagine that their descendants could have learned enough to menace us? To threaten an empire that for 3,000 years has controlled millions of planetary systems?
Well, we've been through all this before, Haim. I've told you again and again, I'm not worried about your other experimental world. They're still cavemen or less. But this planet here, pure genius, Doc. A planet where nobody has an IQ below 150. And God knows how high they go. Well, I just can't tell about them. And His Majesty is worried, too. There have been rumors. He sent me here himself to decide whether or not those rumors could be true.
But the people down there don't even know the Galactic Empire exists. Why, the men there are still farming with plows and sailing in steamships.
Sure. What of it? Ordinary men on Earth with an average IQ of 100 needed maybe 500,000 years to get as far as your geniuses have in 1,500. I understand they've already developed Newtonian physics, chemical batteries, telescopes, world government. At that rate, they'll be visiting the other planets of this system in 50 years. They'll reach the stars in a century, and then they'll be loose in the Galactic Empire. You think they'd fit tamely into the caste system, like good subjects of the Emperor? Why, they couldn't even if they tried. They'd produce a new invention and a new philosopher every day. And that would mean the end of stability, and that, Professor, would mean the end of the Empire.
So you say, but you're a soldier. You don't understand.
Yes, I know. I'm a dirty militarist who can't see past the end of my own gun. All I'm good for is killing, huh? And you're a noble intellectual scientist.
Yeah,
I've heard that guff before, Professor, and I've gotten pretty tired of it.
But I tell you, the genius people are cooperative and...
My orders are to inspect the place and decide for myself whether they're right or not. So that's what I'm going to do. Come along, Hein.
Exploring Tomorrow continues in just a moment. When driving, luck can stay with you for years. But on the road, it can leave you in a split second, a tragic split second. So drive carefully. You will live longer, and you will arrive alive.
There's been considerable discussion of what constitutes good and evil over the last few millenniums. But, you know, there's an interesting comment someone made. I don't know where it did originate. Melodrama is the conflict between good and evil. And tragedy is the conflict between good and good. When two good men, each with a good point to make, get into conflict, that's where real tragedy starts.
All right, Professor. I've got the lifeboat into the atmosphere and leveled off. So where do I head now? Hein. Wake up, you wool-headed dreamer.
I'm sorry, Marshal. I was thinking, looking out the porthole and thinking.
What about?
How lovely the sky is. So blue. And the land below, mountains and forests and hopeful young farms.
Oh, no. A poet yet. Well, I'm thinking about my job of inspection. Where shall we go?
Fly north, northeast for 700 kilometers and you'll find this planet's largest city. It's also the capital of their world government.
That'll do. I should be able to observe a pretty good cross-section of the genius race.
Do you seriously believe you can decide the fate of an entire world on the basis of what you see in one city? How do you expect to learn anything even there? You don't speak any of the local languages, not even the international one that developed.
You'll talk for both of us. We'll claim to be visitors from a long ways off, the opposite hemisphere. We'll just wander around town for a couple of days, and I'll get the feel of the place.
You mean you decide whether these people live or die just on the basis of a hunch?
Now, here we are. Landed in an empty meadow. You sure nobody will happen by?
Well, what do they do? The lifeboat is invisible.
Even so. Well, we don't want the genius people learning the truth, do we, Professor?
Well, of course not. On that, you and I do agree. But my own motive is that I don't want to spoil the experiment.
Come on, let's get moving. We'll have to hike into the city. nice outdoors. Sunshine. I don't know when I last breathed air that didn't come out of a tank.
And you turn all this into black radioactive ash.
Come on, I said. Let's start walking. Well, there's a road. Pretty well paved.
Oh, yes. 10 years ago, this was a livestock trail. Today, they're driving steam automobiles over it. I predict that 10 years from now, the first airplane will use this for a landing strip.
Where's the mass market to support all that progress?
There isn't much of one. Actually, most people here are still riding around in buggies. You see, they have a unique social system. The average man on this planet would rather buy a new book than a new gadget. But at the same time, their engineers keep on making inventions because a mind of such power can't help being creative.
And I tell you, the Empire can't afford what you call creativeness.
Well, doggone that Empire.
Look what you started, Dale. You did this.
I know.
You did this.
You. You.
I have a perverse sense of pride over it.
We don't use guilt and blame around here.
Yes. I have a perverse sense of pride about that last antic.
All right.
Moved to tears. We dabble with all your emotions.
So we have this planet where they wiped out everybody's brain, even though they have high IQs, and we'll see.
They're getting ready.
Whether that's a danger to the universe.
Well, Robinson.
What did you say it was to the universe? Sorry,
a danger
I didn't quite hear you.
Danger,
Will Robinson. Will Robinson.
Yes.
See, I gave you guys such cool toys, I tell you. I'm glad. I'm proud of it.
Excuse me. Must be time for a cigarette.
Yeah, so this is weird because the...
You know, Dale, I had to think because I was going into work this morning, and there's this poor old guy there in his car before he didn't want to go into work yet, coughing his lungs out. And in his hand was a cigarette.
Of course.
Oh, my.
I haven't smoked in 10 years, and I can still... You know, it happens.
Oh, that was pleasant. Let's wrap up. Exploring tomorrow. Planet of Geniuses.
It only happens in space.
Planet of Geniuses.
It does.
Part 2. Did I mention it's Planet of Geniuses?
So this is their biggest city.
Right. There are about 1 million people in it.
You call that a city?
Considering the small population of this world, yes.
It's backward, all right. Carts pulled by animals. Water pumped by windmills, bearded men in clothes of vegetable fiber, wood and plaster houses, gas lamps.
That's what I keep telling you, Marshal. These people aren't demons. They're as human as you and I. They're born the same way as us. Grow up, learn, love, laugh, weep and die like human beings anywhere in all space and time. They simply happen to be more intelligent. Let them live.
70 generations ago, they were savages. They didn't even know how to chip a flint. And now they've come to this.
Yes. Our observers mingling with him in disguise have already learned more about historical dynamics than...
Well, sure, this city is still primitive. But in another 100 years, they have schools, laboratories. They don't frown on artists and scientists and philosophers. They glorify them. So in 100 years, they'll be out among the stars. And we don't dare allow that.
But they won't, Marshal. Not necessarily. If only you'd let me show you the economic data... For instance, the great uninhabited spaces they still have right on their home planet.
Shut up. I'm thinking.
Thinking? I doubt if you're able to.
What did you say?
Nothing.
I have a knife, Grand Marshal Gorham. You don't know that, do you? You think I'm just another ineffectual little dreamer, don't you? Well, you may find out different. Mm-hmm.
If by militarist we mean someone who believes that it is necessary to use physical force to carry out, to implement a theory, a belief, then it looks to me like Professor Heim has become a militarist. He intends to use force, doesn't he?
Haral Tusola, Ferdinand.
Saban Hostet.
What did he say, that bellhop or whatever he was?
He wished us good night in the international language. He thinks we're foreigners, you remember?
If he only knew how foreign.
That's a cheap way to feel superior, isn't it?
Oh, shut up, Heim. I'm still trying to decide what to do about this planet. There are too many paradoxes. The waiter in the restaurant wanted to ask you about the ethnology of the country he thought we came from. This is a nice, clean hotel room, but it doesn't have running water. And yet the clerk downstairs was reading what I swear must have been a mathematical journal.
That make them monsters? Under the social system here, such routine jobs are done by students. And, of course, every person on this planet goes through at least 5 years of college. But that's all it amounts to, Gorham.
A whole world of long-haired dreamers who are experimenting with aircraft and rockets, who developed the theory of evolution before they learned how to smelt iron. I don't trust them.
Of course, you don't understand them. You're too... I mean...
Too stupid? Isn't that what you're going to say, Professor? I'm just a dumb militarist who worked his way from private soldier to Grand Marshal of the Galactic Empire. No fine scientist, just a hired hand keeping the barbarian raiders off your scientific back. Well, Professor Heim, I happen to be the man who will decide what's to become of this planet of geniuses.
And have you decided yet, Your Excellency?
Not yet. I can still take a couple of days.
Two more days? After the Foundation worked for 1,500 years?
Wait. What are you doing?
This is a knife in my hand, Marshal Gorham. Don't move. If you reach for that blaster, I'll kill you.
You're going crazy, honey?
No. You're the crazy one. You're the lunatic who would blood out man's last best hope, this planet. You allow yourself 3 days to decide the whole future of a world. Now unbuckle that blaster. Don't let your hand come near the trigger, or drop it on the floor. Kick it over to me. So. Now I've got you where I want you.
But, Professor, I haven't decided anything yet. I might decide this experiment is safe. I might still report to the Emperor. There's nothing to be afraid of. He can forget your race.
You might, but I know you won't. I'm going to kill you, Marshal Gorham. I'm going to report to the spaceship captain that you died accidentally. And then I'm going to hope that the next Imperial Inspector will be more reasonable.
Look out! Stand back, you fool! No!
I only stabbed you in the arm that time, Marshal Gorham. But you're in a corner now. I'll get you this time.
Slow! Slow, Varadan!
Go along, or I don't go along, you rat!
Who's done it, Schulte? Slow! Slow!
You spoke their language. You already know the language of this planet.
The attendant has the key, of course. He's coming in. Drop that knife, Professor Heim. He's a husky chap.
Shalomona.
Yai. Take la odore. Drop that knife, I said, Professor.
Yes, of course.
Sit down, Heim. You look more shocked than I am. Gavla no ma, Jordan.
Yai, rigatan gorul.
He's gone after the first aid kit for me. Not that you hurt me seriously.
I'm sorry.
It doesn't matter.
And you're a native of this planet yourself.
Yes. I was born here, though I've lived most of my life out in the Empire.
We thought we were keeping a planet full of geniuses and ignorance. How long have you known?
We began to suspect the truth 500 years ago. And we discovered that all life had evolved from lower forms, but couldn't find a subhuman ancestor for man. And finally, your disguised observers were identified. We even used blind man techniques to spot those wearing invisibility screens. Did you really expect you could go on fooling a race with twice your brain power?
Well, we thought so. Yes, I suppose it was foolish.
Some of us wormed our way into space as stowaways or in disguise, that sort of thing. People here live quietly, so as not to give the show away. We don't tell our children the truth till they're old enough to keep up the pretense. But meanwhile, for the past 300 years, our agents have been out in the Empire, learning everything you know, posing as citizens working up into the key positions of your government. We can do that by sheer merit.
Yes, obviously you can become imperial marshals.
Quite. And when the emperor got suspicious, he sent me, his trusted soldier, a notorious anti-intellectual, to check up for him. Naturally, I was going to give this planet a clean bill of health, but I had to string you along first to make it look good. Evidently, I put on a better act than I had planned.
And now that I know your secret?
I'll have to report that you were accidentally killed here, Professor. But don't worry. All you have to do is spend the rest of your life here as one of us. I don't think you'll mind that.
Oh, no, not personally. I'd enjoy it. I used to envy the people on this world. But when you, well, your race, I mean, when you've completely taken over the Galactic Empire from within, what do you plan to do?
Well, we'll remodel it, shall I say. I'm afraid you wouldn't understand exactly what we intend to do. It's a little beyond your grasp, but it will be for the benefit of the ordinary galactic citizen, too. The poor, backward, benighted Galactic Empire.
They say that the first requirement for teaching a dog to do tricks is that you have to know more than the dog. If you want to teach a planet full of geniuses to do tricks for you, first make sure you know more than the geniuses. You can enslave some kinds of entities, but you can't enslave, you can't impose on entities who are more intelligent, more thoughtful, more wise than you yourself. What will happen is they'll turn out to be helping you in disguise.
Fascinating adventure in Exploring Tomorrow. Heard in our cast tonight were Ron Dawson and Al Ruscio. Script was by Powell Anderson, produced and directed by Sanford Marshall here in New York. Guy Wallace speaking.
My sensors indicate an intruder is present.
Which also means... Yeah. It also means it's time... You know what it's time for.
Captain Crunch.
It's really just a matter of how fast one can scroll. Erie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
Unused genius is the same as the absence of it.
Okay, now wash your hands. Wait, you have to wait for an employee to wash your hands.
I wash mine before and after. I know where I've been. That's bad when you can creep yourself out.
Yeah, I used to wonder why I don't have dinner with Dale more often. Now I know why.
Yeah, thanks, Dale.
Safety reasons.
I can easily blame it on distance, Dave. good luck.
Yes.
Gesundheit. Go wash your hands. You done sneezed.
That's right.
We need a hand washing sound effect. I don't have one. That doesn't do it.
I thought I just played one. A flushing.
Did you?
Yes.
Isn't there?
Toilet.
There's some like Oh, look, well, if you're washing your hands in the toilet, why bother?
That's right.
Hey, Dale, I mean, I know we
now,
have another show.
Now you understand me. But,
I know we have another show, but I have a rarity here for Erie House. It still gives us plenty of time for the other show. But can I share that here?
Yes, please.
Let me find it. Let me find it. There it is. Now, as most of you know, I run a radio reading service for the blind in Akron. And one of the things that we do is Al and I, who's also part of our TV show, we read the comics and we act them out. And in between, we play TV theme songs, things like that. Just kind of an upbeat thing.
Cool.
About a month ago, there's Pearls Before Swine. I'm not sure who all is familiar, who all gets that in there. And even if you get it in your paper, whether you get it or not. Anyway, they had an episode where Pig has rewritten the words to John Lennon's Imagine. So I got out the – and we do voices with these characters as well. So I got out the karaoke version of Imagine. And this is kind of what happened. I clipped this out from our broadcast. And we're going to get Pig revved up right here.
Thank you so much.
Here it comes.
Oh, God.
Imagine there's no Facebook. It's easy if you try. No trolls, berate us. Around us, no more lies. Imagine all the crackpots. Silence.
Al Klesh. I usually I'm that wise ass on the hill. Dispensing wisdom. So
Gar has a small gas problem.
Oh my. Anyway, I wanted to share that. I thought that came out so fun. I just wanted to share that with everybody.
That was very good, Dave. That was hilarious.
Lost in space bloop.
Yep.
Lost in space.
But we do
bloop
still have
bloop.
Time for our coup de grace, if you will.
Coup de grace.
With one of my favorites, X minus one. This is a Woo-hoo. Tale called Courtesy.
Your gra may have cooties, mine doesn't.
All right. Courtesy, X minus one, and it's from
August 18th, 1955.
Try February 22nd,
1956. Wait,
X-minus
one? Wait.
Countdown. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. That was Junkyard.
X-minus 4, 3, 2, X-minus 1, fire.
From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Street & Smith, publishers of astounding science fiction, presents X-1. Tonight's story, courtesy. This is the story of the second expedition to the planet of Landro. I'm recording it for any future expeditions which might land on this godforsaken sphere, in the hope that they may learn from our tragic example. As I write, there are two of us left. Two, out of an original complement of 180 men. One of us, myself, will be dead in less than 23 minutes. As for the other, heaven have mercy on him, I do not know. On June 3rd, 1997, less than 2 months ago, the last of our supply ships blasted off from Lando for their return to Earth. After it had gone, I remember looking out across the plain at the dead city, one of thousands that dotted this planet. It had tall, graceful buildings, atomic power systems, vacuum conveyors, all perfect, all deserted, all ominous. How had it happened? The best guess was that the plague had frightened the original inhabitants of the planet so that they'd piled into rocket ships and headed for some distant planet. I often wondered why a civilization so advanced as Landro could not find a serum to beat the plague. It had taken our Earth doctors less than 6 months to develop an immunization method. Well, maybe those aborigines back in the hills knew the answer. That strange, ugly little people who had taken to the caves the day we landed. I was thinking these things when something happened that gave me the shock of my life.
Good evening, Captain.
Oh, what brings you here, Doctor?
It's the matter of the serum, sir.
Oh, what about the serum?
It's no good.
No good?
It's too old. 10 years too old.
Didn't you examine it?
Yes, I did, but, well, my eyesight has been failing lately.
Are you aware, Doctor, that the last supply ship has returned to Earth? Do you know we'll have no more contact for 2 years?
I...
Just, how long do you give us?
Well, the present immunity will last a week or so. Then, without booster shots, it's just a question of time until someone picks up the plague. After that...
What about the natives? They don't die from the plague.
The accepted theory is that they have developed an immunity.
Well, suppose they haven't developed an immunity, Doctor. Suppose they get the disease.
Then they must have a treatment for it. If they don't, there would be no natives.
Would you be willing to go on an expedition to the hills to find out?
At this point, Captain, I'd be willing to do anything. Absolutely anything. I am truly sorry.
You're sorry? Dr. Morgan, sometime when you aren't too busy, when you have a moment, I'd hate to inconvenience you. Would you mind telling me how it feels to murder 180 men? 181, including yourself. I did a lot of thinking after Dr. Morgan left my hut. It was still unreal for me. After all, the planning of an expedition was no simple thing. You put into it the result of years of training and experience, years of study at the academy, years of learning how to handle men and natives. Every man on my crew was hand-picked for his skill. And yet, a simple thing like a myopic surgeon misreading a label could blast the whole thing. Yes, it was a shame. And I did the only thing I could think of. I yelled for Bat Ears Brady. Brady! Get your carcass in here. Take the lead off.
Okay, okay. Well, what's up?
Sit down, Bat Ears.
You got trouble, Kev?
We got trouble.
What?
The serum's no good.
What?
Morgan forgot to check it.
It's 10 years too old.
Holy jumping snails. You're going to court-martial that?
That wouldn't do much good. We'll all be dead pretty soon unless somebody figures something out.
Well, what are you going to do, Kev?
Well, there's only one chance. One chance in 10 million.
What?
The natives.
Them cave rats. What good can they do us?
Well, they don't get the plague, so maybe they know a cure.
Okay. Let's get a few of them and beat it out of them.
That's why you're here.
Shoot.
How'd you like to come along on a little expedition up to the cave country? You, me, the doctor, and Faulkner.
Faulkner? Now listen, Cap, he's worse than the doctor.
Yes, but he knows more about the native culture than anybody here. He's the only one who's completely familiar with the records of the first expedition.
Okay, so it's me, you, the doc, and Faulkner. When do we start?
Tonight, in half an hour. We should reach the cave country by tomorrow. With luck, we'll be able to find natives before night. Benny Faulkner was the expedition anthropologist, one of the most unfortunate-looking individuals I've ever met. An ugly man with large ears and a big nose. His body was small and consumptive, but he had a good brain. He was the best anthropologist the Interplanet Institute could recommend. He and Dr. Morgan were the only two civilians on the expedition. We set out. And after several hours hard walking.
Cap.
Now, what is it?
Don't look now, but very slowly turn your eyes to the right and look behind that big yellow rock.
Okay.
You see anything?
No.
Keep looking. Don't stop walking. Let on.
Okay.
There.
Yes, it looked like a shadow or something.
It's one of them gimpos. He's been following us now for almost an hour, dodging in and out behind the rocks. Shall I bring him in?
No, not yet. Just pretend you don't see him. Tell the others, if they notice, to show no fear. There's nothing will start these simple-minded cavemen like fear. The manual said, under no circumstances shall a member of the patrol display fear before a native. The dignity of the Earthman must be preserved at all costs. Just before dawn, we reached the cave country. We were tired and hungry, and we stopped to cook some food and rest. Everything was quiet. There was no sign of the gimpo which had been trailing us until...
Hey, get in there, you sneaking little monkey man. Come on, before I break this shovel on your star.
Yeah, what's the trouble?
Cap, I caught me one of these gimpos sneaking around outside the tent.
Bring him in the light of the fire. We can get a look at him. Faulkner?
Yes, sir?
Keep an eye on him. Try to establish some communication.
All right, get in there.
Now, look out. No need to knock him down, Batty.
Oh, that's the only language they understand.
See if you can reach him, Faulkner.
Okay, Captain. I'll need a drum of some sort.
A what?
Well, they have no language as we know it, and they have a very rudimentary sense of hearing. I find they communicate with one another through a very primitive kind of vibration of the tongue. The closest I can come is a series of drum beats, a sort of Morse code. The psychologist on the first expedition had it worked out before he was killed by the plague. I've studied his notes, and I think it'll work.
You mean these little critters can talk to one another?
Yes, I believe they can. At any rate, we'll have a chance to find out. Do we have something I can use for a drum?
Here. Take my water bottle.
Thank you, Doctor. Now, I'll tap it 3 times. That's a greeting of some sort.
Just a moment.
Yes, sir?
I don't want you treating this fellow like an equal. Don't give him the idea that we're desperate. Once they sense that, you're lost.
I have to communicate with him, sir.
Now, just bear in mind what I said. Dignity.
Yes, sir. I'll do my best, sir.
It was a strange sight. On one side of the water bottle crouched little Benny Faulkner, looking for all the world like a human spider. Across from him crouched the Landrian, a humpbacked, gray little creature with an enormous head and those huge, soft, lavender eyes. Every few moments, one would stop the strange tattoo of communication and the other would take it up. I'm setting forth in this narrative the most vital part of their conversation, as Benny Faulkner later transcribed it from the best of his memory. Benny asked, "Why were your cities abandoned? Was it the plague?" The native said, "Yes." Benny said, "Do you still fear the plague?" The native answered, "Yes." "Do any of your people become afflicted?" The answer was, "Some." "How do you treat them?" Silence. "How can we find a cure for the plague?" More silence. Then the native said, "Go among my people." Benny asked, "Will we find the answer among your people?" And the native replied, "My people have the answer." Benny said, "Will you tell me the answer?" The native repeated, "Go among my people." As far as the Landrine was concerned, the conversation was ended. He rose to go, and Faulkner stepped from his path, but Brady was there to ensure the bet.
Hold on there, bucko. You ain't going no place.
Now, don't maltreat him, Brady. What did he say, Penny?
He says his people have the answer.
What do you think?
There may be some truth in it. He says some of his people still get the plague.
That must mean it isn't a question of immunity. They must have a cure.
Well, he wasn't clear on that.
Then they must have a vaccine to keep it from spreading.
Does he know?
His answer is for us to go among his people.
Well, that leaves it up to us. The first level of caves is on top of that cliff about a mile ahead.
It's a trap. I'll bet my last dollar on it.
Well, maybe not. And we'll have to risk it.
Wait.
Well?
Let me go. I got you all into this.
But how will you talk?
Benny here can give me enough of the code so I can ask the big question.
You understand that they might just decide to cut your throat?
I'm fully aware of the risk.
All right, Doctor. You go ahead. We'll wait at the foot of the cliff. If you aren't back down in 3 hours, we'll come up after you.
What about the Gimpo here?
We'll hold him as a hostage to ensure the doctor's safety. If the doc comes back, all right, we'll let him go. If not... Well, that's your job, Brady.
A pleasure.
It took Dr. Morgan about an hour to pick his way up the side of the cliff to the first of the openings where the Landrians lived. He waved to us before he entered the mouth of the cave, and we waved back. And then we settled down to wait. It was a long, long wait.
Eight o'clock. He's been up there more than 3 hours, Cap.
Well, we'll give him a little more time.
Hey, stop it. Getting colder.
Yes, keep that fire going.
How much longer are you going to wait, Cap?
Oh, we've got lots of time.
You'd think he'd heard of something by now if they was going to knock him off, I mean.
Oh, not necessarily. Wait. Look, up on the cliff.
That's him, all right. Hey, what's he running for?
I don't know. He looks scared.
That crazy fool, if he don't look out...
Doctor! Dr. Morgan, look out! Look out!
Well,
always fun.
Always.
He blowed up real good.
I think you turned on the mic just a wee bit too early there, Dale.
Yes. There you go. There you go.
What more can we do to these people?
I have no idea.
And they keep coming back. Shame on
they
us.
They keep coming back. Oh!
Is this one you're familiar with, Dale? This story here. I know you like you have most of the X minus ones down.
Yeah. No, I have not. I have not heard this one all the way through until today.
Uh-huh.
Until today. Oh, yeah. Crazy. Okay, so they tossed out a date. All right, this was recorded. This was aired 1955, and they kicked out a date of 1995, 1997, something like that.
Yeah.
We have not come as far as they really thought we were going to come.
Well, that's what I was saying earlier. That's just so weird when they do something for 20, 30, 50 years in the future. Guess what? We're 50 years in the future, and we didn't catch up.
And we're still trying to figure out how to wash our hands correctly.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. We have to have an employee do it for us. That's right.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Only employees know how to wash my hands.
That's right.
Oh, it's just one thing after the next.
The pain.
May have been the most annoying person ever.
That work?
All right. Thank you.
Do we have any pertinent data? I don't know.
Nope.
Okay.
and just watch, Fogsbane. Your turn is next. We're just waiting for the mailman.
I have it. The true curtain call of that entire television show was when they finally got the robot to say the word Bob.
Bob?
Bub. Yeah.
Bub.
He had to say Bub. Like a robot's gonna say Bub.
Yeah, hey, they have no lips. They can't. They don't have lips.
Yeah, he had no lips. It was incredibly
How do you say Bub without lips?
MIDI files.
Yeah.
MIDI
files. Well, wait, they have MIDI files in the future? They couldn't find anything better than MIDI files in the future?
They had MIDI files in 1965 or whenever Lost in Space came on.
Yeah, but...
I know that MIDIs are old.
Yeah, they're old, man. They're like almost as old
MIDIs
as me.
Are old.
Well, okay, they're not, but...
They're as old as Lost in Space. Bloop, bloop, bloop. Bloop, 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 bloop.
Gar the bloop.
Gar the bloop.
Yeah.
Bloop, bloop. Oh, man. Whole lot of fun with it. So not only are they having hand-washing issues, it's 1995, and they're having the plague. This is way too close to reality here.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, in a way it is. In a way it is. In a way it is.
All right.
Yeah.
Shasta soda and a salt lick? Seriously, Gar? I like Rob
Smith.
Yeah,
sure.
Butterscotch root beer or birthday cake soda?
All I can say is Parma.
Parma. That is a city. Jeez, how fast do you think I can scroll for the love of all the sun?
Bloop, bloop. There we go.
There you go. Man.
Okay.
There we go.
I want you to make a video of yourself polka-ing.
I can do that.
Yes. And then send that to
me. Just like I told you about Bowman Body in Soul Train. Yeah, I could do that.
Yeah. It would be similar, but it would be polka varieties instead, as we called it here in Ohio.
Yes.
It was an actual show called
Polka
Varieties.
I'll have to get some Gar and Lederhosen, it won't be pretty.
And while you keep that ugly thought in your head, we're going to wrap up X-1 courtesy of not having to see Gar and Lederhosen.
We found the doctor at the foot of the cliff, crumpled and broken. There were no marks on his body, nothing except a twisted, mocking grin on his face. Oh, yes, and one other thing. Scrawled across the pad he had taken with him on which to make notes concerning the answer was a single word. The word was courtesy. We threw the paper away. The expedition was a failure. Though Bat Ears claimed he'd get it out of the Gimpo if I'd let him. I nodded in agreement. Bat Ears took the little native off behind an outcropping of rock. He was back in 15 minutes, dripping with sweat.
Well,
let's go, Cap.
Nothing.
But nothing.
Is he...
They ain't made very good, these little gray people. They come apart too easy, so let's go, huh, Cap?
All right. Benny...
Benny, what is it?
I feel kind of sick all of a sudden. In the back of my head, a dull kind of pain.
Let me see your tongue. Come on, give me a hand, Bat Ears. We've got to get him back to camp.
What is it?
I'm not sure, but that blackness on the tongue and the headache, it could be the plague. By the time we got Benny Faulkner back to camp, he had the red spots on his body, and then the fever began to rage. It was the plague, no mistake about it. Before morning, Collins, the supply sergeant, had it. Then it was Peabody. After that, the men went down like tenpins. Then one morning, Bat Ears Brady dragged himself into my tent and sat down. The lines in his face told me the end was coming pretty fast. Sit down, Brady. Well, what's the count?
Six left. We bury the chaplain today. Got anything to drink?
Sorry, I'm all out.
How about a cigarette, then? You got a cigarette?
Yeah, sure. Here. How's Faulkner?
I don't get it. He's still alive.
Still alive?
Yep. In fact, he's getting better. He's sitting up.
Holy mackerel.
Oh, this is a good cigarette.
It's like any other.
No. This one's different, Cap. This is my last.
What do you mean, Brady?
Take a look at my tongue. See? Little black spots.
Somehow I managed to get him into bed. He was already raving when I gave him the last of the morphine. It was incredible. Big, brawling, Bat Ears Brady, a tower of strength, lying sick and whimpering on a cot. When he died, I went out on the moors to think. The sun was a dull red glow. Cold breeze whipped up. But somehow I couldn't forget Faulkner. Why should Faulkner recover from a plague from which no man has ever recovered? Surely there must be a reason. Nothing happened without a reason. I turned and went back to see Benny Faulkner.
Hello, Captain.
Hello, Benny. How are you?
Pretty good. I got up and walked a couple of steps today. How goes it?
Brady's gone. Oh. I just buried him. Listen, Benny, there must be some reason why...
Well, there's nothing strange about me, nothing different from any other man.
There must be. You survived the virus. Well, Benny, I want you to tell me everything you know about yourself, everything you can remember. Because somewhere in your makeup is some little thing that makes the difference. If I can find that thing, then maybe I can do something to save myself and the rest. Even if I can't, at least I can leave a record for any future expedition that comes to Landro. Okay?
Okay, Captain. Where should I start?
At the beginning. I'm going to take notes.
Well, I was born on the 2nd of July in 1971. My parents were ordinary people. My father was... Look, Captain, I've told you everything I can remember. 3 days now you've gone over me, pawed me, questioned me. What else can I tell you?
Benny, let's go over that last part once again.
Where should I start?
Take it from where the native started to walk away. You stepped out of his path and Brady grabbed him.
Okay, so I stepped out of his path.
Why?
What do you mean, why?
Why did you step out of his path?
Why not? Courtesy, I guess. What's the matter?
Courtesy. That's the word that Dr. Morgan had scrawled in his notebook.
Well, I don't see that.
I don't either. Tell me, Benny, why should you want to be courteous to a native?
Why not?
What about maintaining your own dignity?
Are you talking about dignity or arrogance?
I don't know. Benny, listen, maybe we were all wet in our deductions. Maybe these cities here on Landro weren't deserted centuries ago. Maybe these little people up in the caves are the same people who used to live in those big cities.
Why would they leave?
Maybe they found out the big cities weren't the answer. Maybe they found out that civilization doesn't necessarily bring happiness. So they just packed up and left, returned to the simple life.
Oh, it doesn't make sense. You're forgetting the plague.
What is the plague, Benny?
Well, I don't know.
Is it a virus?
Well, I don't think they ever found out.
You know what I think?
What?
I think the plague is nothing more than what we know as greed and arrogance.
Captain, you're going off your rocker.
I think maybe we're in line to die. Serum was good. In fact, I don't think the serum had anything to do with it.
Oh, I never heard anything as crazy, fantastic in my life.
No? I think I'll go back to my tent and finish writing the report. I am beginning to sweat a little.
Captain, maybe it isn't the plague.
It is. I've seen it too many times to kid myself about it.
Maybe hot compresses or something.
No, Ben.
Listen, Captain, you don't believe that junk about courtesy, do you? I mean, that's a lot of nonsense. You must know that. Holy mackerel, Captain. You do believe it, don't you?
Good night, Benny. I think I'd like to be alone for a while.
Okay. Good night, Captain.
Maybe the supply ship will be early. You can probably stick it out.
Sure. Good night, Captain.
And this concludes my report. I'm turning it over to Benny Faulkner in the hopes that he will be able to transmit it to any other expedition commander who contemplates exploring the planet of Landro. The fever is beginning to mount now. My hands tremble as I write. The end should not be far off. There's little question in my mind as to what it'll be. You see, I didn't have a chance. I stepped out of no paths. I showed no courtesy.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Street and Smith, publishers of astounding science fiction. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you Courtesy, adapted for radio by George Lefferts from the story by Clifford Simad. Featured in the cast were Brett Morrison as Captain Ira Warren, Arnold Robertson as Battiers Brady, Edwin Jerome as Dr. Morgan, and Bill Griffiths as Benny Faulkner. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Ken McGregor and is an NBC Radio Network production. And now, next week, the frontier is a strange place. And a frontier is not always easy to recognize. It may lie on the other side of a simple door marked No Admittance. But it is always deadly dangerous. What happens when an innocent girl ignores a single regulation? You will find out next week at X minus one.
When you buy United States savings bonds, you help to build your own future security. Here's an opportunity to save systematically for long-range personal objectives. And with their increased yield and other improvements, U.S. savings bonds are a better investment than ever before.
Bloops and pigs. That's all we do.
That sounds like a buffet. Sounds like a buffet. Yeah.
So did we learn anything? Did we learn anything? Eerie House Radio proudly presents Gar's moral of the story.
If laws of personality killed humans, evolution would have found its stop button a long time ago.
God. Oh, my word. It's the David Letterman School of Comedy. Milk that gag for all you can. Dairyman's Association School of Comedy. Milk that joke.
Milk that joke.
Mm-hmm.
Why not? Yes. They have almond milk and they have wheat milk, so they must have joke milk. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I have no idea how you milk an almond, but they must somehow.
It's kind of embarrassing. Can't go over it on radio. It's not appropriate for our listeners, I think.
It's barely appropriate for us.
Yeah. Ah, Nellie's come home at last.
Milking cows, I understand. I don't do it, but I understand. And I got to go wash my hands.
Never milk a cow with cold hands. How a cow gets cold hands, I don't know.
Oy. Incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Oh, my.
Hey.
Hey, Dale. I got a dime for the jukebox if we want to get away from the pigs and the crying.
I don't know. It's
kind of romantic, isn't it?
I want to see him run out of tears, you know? Yeah, if you got a dime or a nickel or a wooden coin of some sort.
How about a shekel?
I got a slug. Here's a slug.
There's a slug.
Make sure it's not Sluggo. Yeah. Make sure it's not Sluggo.
Sluggo.
No, not Sluggo.
Yeah,
Sluggo.
She's gotta run the vortex over there.
That's right. That's right. The vortex over there.
That's right.
That's right. Right.
Slap that metal disc into the jukebox there.
Yeah, we can pull the jukebox. There it is.
Sick. Sick man. He's a very sick man.
Sully Mason's going to take us way, way back. He's going to interpret a song that was popular in 1902.
Did you ever hear the story about Ragged Jagged Jack? He comes down the street with his pack on his back. He comes in the morning and he comes at night. Gobbles up everything in sight. He wakes up the neighborhood for miles around. He's a regular alarm clock, always wound. Gets beneath your window when you try to get to sleep. He yells in a voice so loud and deep. Any rag, any rag. Any rags, any bones, any bottles today, there's a big black rag picker coming your way. Any rags, any bones, any bottles today, the same old story in the same old way. If you happen for to leave a thing out all night, you wake up in the morning, it's gone from your sight. You know Ragged Jack has been that way. He's a very bad omen, people say. He stole his furniture, he stole his wife. He'll steal from his friend, he'll steal your life. He never gets molested as he daily walks about, but things disappear when he yells out. Rags.
Old clothes and bottles to throw away.
Rags.
Old shoes and papers to sell today.
Any rags, any bones, any bottles today, there's a big black rag picker coming your way. Rags.
Or junk or buggies or one horse shade.
Rags.
Old cars or Fords or Chevrolet.
Any rags, any bones, any bottles today, the same old story in the same old way.
But the rag man doesn't have a street to himself. Look, here comes that peanut vendor.
Peanut. Little ladies, when
when the shadows start to creep. Buy a bag of peanuts now before you sleep.
So the rag man and the peanut vendor say hello. Then they hear a little bell, and that's a reminder that down the street they'll meet the scissors grinder. Hello, Joe.
Any scissors to grind? Scissors grinder, Joe, any scissors
peanuts
to grind?
Down the street, but there are more vendors he's sure to meet. Aha, 'tis the baker.
Hot bun.
And look, here comes the huckster.
Yes, we have no bananas.
The huckster has no bananas, but Ishka Bibble has the newspaper.
Paper, paper, paper.
And do you remember the old-fashioned umbrella mender?
Umbrellas come in, umbrellas come in.
It rains, this goes on day after day in the same old way. You can hear the vendors cry their wares and say,
it
rains,
hot
ones,
yes, we have bananas, paper, paper.
We have bananas.
Fish, fish,
fish.
Yes. K. Kaiser, any rags, hey, any bones, any bottles?
Hey, Dale, I think before you take off here, we got to thank everybody that put up with all the silliness tonight.
Yeah. Thank you for enduring us. Rob Smith, GGSI Paper, Fogsbane Linda, Lou CW, and anybody else that we can't see but are listening in, whether it be live or in the archive. Tomorrow night, it's CBS Radio Mystery Theater, Oceans, just Oceans of Emptiness. That's right.
That's
got more planets to see tomorrow night. And after that, at, say, around 8, what do you suppose might happen?
If you tune over to twitch.com, I think it is, you'll see Gar the Ghoul.
TwitchTV.com.
Starring in
Twitch
Horrible
TV.com.
Horror. Starring Gar the Ghoul.
Yep. TwitchTV.com. Don't forget your
TV. Okay. TwitchTV.com. There you go. Okay, sir.
Yes, make sure you're twitching properly.
Yeah, do
yep.
whatever
so
you need
we'll
to do.
So we'll continue.
The I'm
outer
for twerk.com,
space
man.
Fun. Stick around for the ending, folks. A little different. We're giving Vince the night off one more time.
What?
Yep. And Dave, any sightings of Weirdness Really Bad or Spaceship One?
Just did a filming on Wednesday. We went down to Alonzo Howe to Troll Hall Museum, where the Guinness Book of World Record collection of trolls is. And
they're all sitting
had,
there hitting people on the internet, saying nasty things.
Yep. And so we were hosting a movie from there, and that's in the computer, and I start hopefully do a little bit of editing on it this weekend to get the whole thing ball running.
Yep. I don't mean to be this way, but it really ought to be called the Wishnick Hall of Fame.
Yes.
Wishnick Hall of Fame.
Parma.
We're originally Wishnicks.
Well, they have other trolls there too, so this isn't just the Wishnicks.
Yes. We don't have trolls. We have all nice people.
That's right. We do.
It's amazing. Hopefully they'll be back with us for tomorrow night.
Well, that would be the courteous thing for them to do.
That's right.
We don't want to give them a plague.
What would the robot say?
Tomorrow, same channel, same time. Well, not really. 6:30. Whatever. Thank you. I thought that would make a fine ending.
Fine ending.
That is a good ending.
Tune in next week. Yep.
Good ending.
To another
What did she say?
She said, wow, like, this rocks.
This rocks. Yeah. Oh, okay.
We have the nicest listeners in the world.
Yes, we do. We do.
We even say it behind their back.
Certainly
even better than the people in Parma.
Yep.
Our function of the environmental control robot is to supply all data pertinent to this particular field. Cannot compute. Programming data insufficient. I will accompany you. You may need protection.
Oh.
The following Lost in Space episode was brought to you by Trojan. Protecting everyone. Throughout
the galaxy, yes.
The galaxy.
Yeah, but you wouldn't. But then you wouldn't need to take your robot along.
Exactly. Well, no, maybe the robot's the dispenser. Get it?
Oh.
Ah.
Well, hopefully it's not the. Oh, never mind. Will you throw away the soiled product? Oh, jeez. Why do these topics have to come up? Why?
I don't know. So when we were listening to, which one was it? It was the one that got lost. But Worlds Apart in 2000 plus. Today we were listening to that. And they said they were on a planet exactly opposite to the orbit of the Earth. So
yes.
Because they were on opposite, they would never meet each other, right? But
yes.
They said this. They said that they couldn't see any stars they recognized. The Earth goes around the sun, and we know the stars that are there by
yes.
looking at them. And it doesn't
yes.
matter. So
no.
that was
they
a little bit
the same
weird.
Thing, but like a half a year apart.
Right. So they would still see Orion's belt and whatever, you know, might be out of joint.
Or what
would be
in our western sky would be in their eastern sky.
Right. But
think
they should
that.
Still be able to go, hey, look, you know, there it is.
Yeah,
that star cluster looks curiously like the Big Dipper.
Yes,
you know, because see, they got thrown off with the two moons. They were thinking, you know, where are we? But
yeah.
So what happened? If I understand the story, is they took off from Earth, headed to Neptune or wherever, and then
mm-hmm.
and then they ran into a comet, and the comet slingshotted them around to the backside of the sun.
Ooh, that sounds like that hurts.
Ooh, it did.
The backside of the sun. That's
and that's
horrible.
Why you wear boxers. Yeah, that's anyway,
punk rock,
so,
a punk rock song of some sort.
yeah.
No, yeah. Wasn't that concept of an alternate world very much like ours, or even the opposite of ours, on the opposite side of our orbit, explored in comic books maybe, and maybe Fantastic Four, or maybe something else?
Oh, the Fantastic Four had the negative zone. There's all kinds of weird stuff in there.
No, not the negative zone. There was something, and maybe it wasn't the Fantastic Four. Just some, I don't know. I remember a comic story with a world on the opposite side of the sun.
And I'm kind of keeping it in the Marvel universe here. I'm trying to figure
out.
I know.
So am I, because that's where most of my reading was.
That's what I was saying, because I can get stuff either way, because Kirby did the New Worlds stuff and brought in Darkseid and all that, you know, crazy stuff.
Yeah, he was amazing.
He was amazing. That was on the other side of the aisle, so to speak. No, it's just I know, you know, Star Trek did a thing of different people, because one person was dark on one side and one person was dark on the other side. The left side of their body, the right side of their body, and they were split. Frank Gorshin did that.
Yeah.
You know, but
That's a classic episode.
Star Trek did the negative, remember, when Spock had the goatee and all that?
Yep.
That was one.
I remember the planet being on the opposite side thing was kind of cool.
I've seen or read that somewhere. Unless that planet might like move towards having satellites like we have. We have so much satellite trash up there. It's insane. There's some type of Google Maps where you can look at the satellites and go like
empty water bottles. Satellites. It's terrible up there.
Yeah. Up there, way up there, we just have them, you know, in orbit. So
banana
if someone
skins.
Was on the opposite side of the sun and they only had that going on, we wouldn't ever really know unless we went over there. It's kind of like the dark side of the moon. We're never going to go over there because it's too dark. We can't see anything, I guess. I don't know.
It's cold.
It's cold. Well, you know, you bring a flashlight and a Bic lighter, you'll be fine.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, there you go. A lot of people have speculated that there's life on the opposite side.
On the opposite side,
I don't know
of...
if that came out of a comic book. Or they're just some. Well, there are people that think that reptilian people are out right below the surface, living on the same planet we are.
Oh, cool!
I think those people are a little bit too far for me.
Everybody, I know that's stupid because everybody knows Mole Man lives down there.
Exactly. And he never runs into the lizard man from Spider-Man.
Yeah, there's no,
you know, so.
Yeah, there's no lizard men down there. Small man.
Now, was something fun. Dave, are you you're familiar with George Carlin's work, or are you not?
Yes.
I mean,
yes, I are.
George Carlin's
yes,
a little bit rough.
He didn't used to be, but he got that way for HBO. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Dale, you might remember this skit. I'm hoping Dave remembers. There was one where George Carlin is talking about human beings, and he talks about our brain, and he says what we've got going on is we've got a mammalian brain, but the mammalian brain is actually a lizard brain covered in a mammalian brain, and that's the evolution. And if you strip away the mammalian brain or the monkey brain, you get the lizard brain. The lizard brain tells us either make love to it to procreate or kill it, whatever it is. Okay.
Yeah, or run.
Or fight or flight. But basically, procreate with it or kill it, you know. So,
well, yeah, that's the 4S, fighting.
I think the mammalian brain might have the run factor more so than the lizard thing. The lizard is pretty aggressive. So it was weird in X-1 where they said this plague that was killing these people was killing them because they weren't courteous. They weren't exhibiting
energy. Oh, if there was
energy.
Only such a thing.
If there was an energy of, say, love and compassion, and that would – see, you're talking about a different world and a different set of physical laws, and these physical laws are targeting – a maladjusted brain that has no courtesy in it. Okay, sure. Well, of course you do. I beg your pardon. See, in saying that, I was courteous.
The one good thing about a country like that is there would be no politicians.
Yes.
Or lawyers.
Yeah.
Or lawyers.
It would be a good world.
No lawyers. No jails. No need for them.
That's right, because if you're bad, you get the plague, man.
Yeah, you're out of there. See, this plague is really creating an amazingly peaceful planet. you know, and so that would be a crazy twist of nature. You know, now we just get stuff here on our world that just takes people out nilly willy. I haven't seen it, you know, it only taking out these people or those people or what, you know, taking out everybody, you know, and I don't know. But so it was kind of interesting, that thing about the courtesy from X-1, because it was saying if you have a flawed personality, nature's going to take you out.
We're
pretty wild.
I'm doomed.
Well,
I just think that they're showing us that the courtesy isn't a bad thing. It's something that I guess perhaps after World War II we were not being as polite to each other and things like that. Perhaps, You know, so it's, I mean, it's just a morality play. It's not meant to
be taken
that seriously, but.
Yes.
But then again.
and from this spawned, say, Howdy Doody and Buffalo Bob and Captain Kangaroo and Sesame Street and all of these things that say it's good to be, you know, and Eek the Cat. You have to remember Eek the Cat.
Oh, gosh, I remember Eek.
It never hurts to help. Yeah, that guy. I actually love that cartoon because here was this cat, and he was doing everything he could to help it, and it was just doom and gloom every time. Just hilarious. It's kind of an anti-hero, sort of. Eek the Cat. But anyway, no, there were, you know, it did bring us to have things that exist that did not, that told us, hey, be nice. Why not? You know, never hurts.
Couldn't hide.
Well, it could, but, you know, we'll not tell that part of the story.
Yeah, we'll take our chances.
Yeah. And so, you know, so that kind of, you know, I'm a cartoonist. I'm an artist. But I don't hug trees, you know, and I don't know if that hurts me or hinders me or, you know, I don't know. Doesn't hurt the tree. The tree's like, why are you touching me? I don't know.
I think there's tree groping going on.
Wasn't there some, there was something like Kids in the Hall or something like that, stop touching me, or maybe it was Saturday Night Live or something. I can't.
That seems more.
Stop touching me. Yeah, something. Stop touching me. Which finally led to personal boundaries, which are good too. You know.
That's a kid thing in general.
It is.
Fussy.
I mean, the first minivan I had, my wife said, we have to get it so that they can each have a seat where they can't touch each other.
Yes.
He's touching me.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm going to touch you both in a minute.
That's right. Don't make me pull over. You know, and maybe that's where they came back with that that incredibly bizarre military vehicle. I can't remember what it was called, but it was incredibly large. Like it took up the entire driving space.
Did either of you ever make your dad pull over just to see what would happen?
I wouldn't be talking today if that happened.
No.
Yeah, I didn't push that envelope either. I kind of like to go to school without a limp.
Yeah. Don't need to go to school with an arm in a sling or with
crutches
a limp.
Or something. That's
missing a limb, you know.
Too many embarrassing questions.
What happened, Johnny? Oh, I'm just walking it off. You know, it'll be okay.
Yeah.
You know.
I made him pull over, and they would just nod and walk away.
I recall this one incident happened because recently this has occurred. There was in Orlando, Florida, when I grew up, there was this place, let's say 3 miles away from my house, but away enough. And my dad had told me like a day earlier, he said, if you ever need anything, you can call. And me and my pal were out goofing around, and we ran out of gas, and I had to call my dad. And he came to that place, and he was like, okay, here's $2. I rescind my offer.
Yeah.
Never call me again.
Recently
in the news, they tore down that 7-Eleven. I was like, oh. See, that's one of the crazy things about getting old. Many of the places I had visited in my past have been torn down.
Rebuilt, refurbished.
Yeah. And they just had an article about that 7-Eleven being torn down.
Yep.
Well, there was a song about Ohio and my city was gone, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Chrissy Hynde out of Chrissy Hynde. She's from Akron, and she wrote it about Akron. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, and it's applicable anywhere, but it just happens to be, you know, my city is gone. And it's just crazy. There was a saying I ran across a long time ago that said, you can never step in the same creek or river twice because the water is not the same.
Ooh, that sounds native, man.
Well, okay.
Which it could, well, because it has that sort of wisdom, that natural wisdom
native.
To it.
It's not native. He was wearing clothes.
You know, I didn't want to get arrested. You know.
And the rest of us appreciate that.
Right. No, I read a lot of the zoos, the Lao Tzu. What's the other guy? The guy that wrote the Book of War. Oh my gosh. Oh, I can't. Well, okay, brain is gone. But yeah, Lao Tzu is a good one.
Sir, did you get anything from Fogsbane?
I did. I actually have a box
don't,
in the
don't,
room.
Don't
that
tell
I,
me.
Don't say
me.
Nothing.
Don't tell me.
Dave hasn't
I'm not,
gotten
I'm
it.
Not,
it
I,
Dave,
I haven't opened it. I haven't opened it, but it's in the other room. I forgot. I got it. Oh, wow.
I have it. Say nothing. Say nothing.
I'm not saying it. Well, I can't. I don't know what's in it.
I want
my
Dave
X-ray
to be surprised.
Vision is intermittent. You know,
yep. I mean, even when you do, let's wait for Dave.
But I got this padded envelope in the UPS box. It was small enough for the UPS box, and I got it, and I was like, I don't know what this is. It was something from California.
I was in a room with
gotten
padded walls.
A free. Okay, you remember, Dale, you know how models, well, Dave, you would know too, how when you get a model kit, they're all on a frame, and you have to clip them off or whatever?
Yes.
Yes.
So I got this thing. It's one of these things, just like a model kit, but it's to size rings. I don't remember ordering it, but I got a ring sizer thing that's on one of these.
That is cool.
I don't know why I'm not ordering a ring, and I'm not tipping my hat. I'm not ordering a ring for you guys either. Sorry, but you know.
Oh, what, shucks.
Is it, you know, sorry. No ring.
Now, just when I thought we
I'll
were getting
your,
close.
Yeah, you're getting close. Yeah, that's right. I'm going to send you guys neckties next. I don't know. Robots are
loops.
Fun enough. I think.
Huh? Neckties with 13 loops?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Did you guys like the piggy bank thing? Because that just came out of nowhere. I was listening to it and I said, I don't know what it is, but the moral has to have a piggy bank in it.
Piggy bank.
The moral was you might not know where you are, but you're never really lost as long as you remember where your piggy bank is.
Yes, I remember that one.
See, my memory is bad. I don't remember it, but I thought it was. I thought it would be funny. That's just completely
weird.
Good. It had nothing to do with what was going on. There was no piggy banks mentioned, but I figured, what the heck.
Oh, that was wasn't that the weekend we did banks? That's the weekend we did banks, I think.
Oh, I could it. Well, I can use it twice. It'll be in the book twice. So when we get the book made, it'll be
the book.
Yeah, Gar's moral of the story, it's going to be right next to the David Letterman list of 10 things or whatever that is.
top 10 list?
Mine's going to be thicker than his, though. Oh, that didn't come out. It's going to have more pages.
I want to know this stuff.
It's going to have more pages than his book. I was talking with Dave over the week, during the week, because I was looking for the moral of the story and stuff. I've got the moral of the story going back to, what did I say? 2007.
Oh, you have them cataloged still? And
2014. No, I've got them all in the computer.
Nice.
I do them and I save them. So I've got them going back to Dave just said 2017 or something like that.
Save them. Collect them with your friends.
I'm going to publish them. There'll be a book. I'll put all three of us on the cover, and I'll be Gars Moore of the story, and it'll just be ridiculous.
And that's the beauty of it, I think.
Yeah, it's just going to be a weird book. It's going to say show name 2000 plus, episode name Worlds Apart, air date whatever that is, and then the moral, and then the next entry. It's just going to be a bunch of these weird. You'd have to go listen to the thing. I don't know. Maybe it will inspire people to go check out old time radio that was played on Erie House, or even better, to go to the archives and check out the thing on the archives.
There you go. Listen to some old shows.
Listen to, yeah. Well, that's why the archives are there. How far back do your archives go? I've never checked.
To infinity and beyond. I believe everything, even back to Creepy Castle, is still in there.
Yeah. It's on the Blog Talk Radio?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I did not know. And now everybody else knows that you can go all the way back to the inception.
Yes.
Before Gar was around.
That sounds dirty. Oh.
Only if you think that way.
Well, there you go. And that's where we
well,
and that's why
go.
We're where we are. That's why we're here.
Bloop, 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 bloop. I don't know.
Debbie again. Debbie the Blue.
Oh, crazy night, eh?
Oh, it's not just the night.
Okay.
That's crazy.
This will be a fun one for me to listen to in a week and a half when I forget that we ever made it.
Oh, God.
Go back and listen to it and go, I don't remember saying any of that, but okay.
That wasn't me. That wasn't me.
It was the bloop.
It was Debbie the bloop. It was a garsonator.
Yes, it was. Yes.
A garsonator or something.
A garsonator, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
So I guess we beat the clock on all the things that we're going to beat up. I'm glad you guys liked the mystery gift that showed up.
Oh, my God. I don't like it. I love it. Jeez.
Yeah, well, there you go. And so I was just happy to do. And again, all three of us have the same thing. Huh?
The only problem is I think that they're talking about me.
The robots?
Yeah.
They are.
Oh, Dave. Oh,
and they're
Dave.
Plotting.
They're whispering instructions.
They spend too many time. Well, you'd be paranoid, too, if everyone was out to get you.
Yeah, you know, it's okay to be paranoid if it's real, if it's true, and you never know.
I hear them whispering instructions, like the cats. The cats are always plotting.
Dale, what was that lady's name? Yvette Vickers? Was that the lady's name?
Yvette Vickers was
the sleazy girl from
Attack of the 50-Foot Woman, and she played the sleazy girl in Giant Leeches.
Giant Leeches.
Oh, yeah.
She was a former Playboy model.
Well.
And Gar told me something I didn't... I knew she died a very lonely death. She was found all crisped up in her home because, like, nobody had seen her for, like, a year and a half, 2 years or something.
Ooh.
Mummified, literally mummified, and... But Dave told me more. I mean, Gar told me more.
Yes.
The rest of the story.
And
yeah,
now the rest of the story.
And now the rest of the story.
Yvette Vickers, very successful, was doing the convention scene, and she had done well. Apparently, she had a pension coming in. She had automatically paid for her utilities and all the things that were necessary for her estate to keep moving. And it was just automatically done. I have the same thing done, too. So she apparently was in bed, and she passed. And when she passed, or she died, she had an electric fan, electric heater in her bedroom. So when she passed, the electric heater stayed on, and it stayed on for like a year. And her remains, due to the heat, mummified. Yeah. So then she's discovered by a neighbor a year after she passed, approximately. And what happened was she was doing very well. She felt like there was somebody stalking her, and she got very paranoid, and it altered her entire life. She disappeared for a year. In that year, she passed in her home, and the heater did its work to mummify her. They finally got her out of there, her remains out of the house. And then her house reverted to her brother. And she despised her brother. She hated him. They did not get along. Well, everything went to the brother. She's gone. She's out of the picture. The brother takes every one of her items, everything that's in the house, brings it out into the front, and gets some type of trampling machine that just beats things up and just absolutely destroys everything that was in the house. All of the props and stuff from her life, all the things,
that's
everything
terrible.
Destroyed. And
no wonder she didn't like her brother.
Yeah, she didn't like him. And maybe for good cause, if that's what he was going to do. He could have been, you could look at it as benevolent, or you could have looked at it as a profiteer. Either way, he could have availed whatever she had to, you know, the general public at large.
That's the shame of it, that was not done. Because
right.
I think, you know, some collector somewhere would cherish that.
Yes, teeth, you know. I never got anything exactly from Eartha Kitt, but I had, I talked with her in an email, and I have the email on my computer somewhere. And I've got, I copied down everything and I put it in a text file. And even though, I reached out and I talked to this woman, and it was right before she passed, and she was just so, so nice. I was like, wow. There are a lot of people that would respect the items that she had.
Yes.
I myself find myself in an odd situation where I'm getting older, more older than younger. You don't get younger until you tune in tomorrow to the CBS Radio Mystery Theater and listen to Oceans of Emptiness. But anyway.
Nice. That was, like that.
Ooh.
I thought I was the segue king. Ooh.
There you
smoking.
Go.
Smoking. That was smoking.
I have all of these collectibles, and some of them are amazing. Some of them are personalized from Mr. Adam West, mostly. A fan would go, "Ooh, yes, amazing, thank you." And I have no one to give them to, so I don't know what's going to happen to them. I'll donate them to something, somehow, somewhere, somewhere.
Yeah.
I guess. I don't know.
Towards the end of Forry Ackerman's life. I mean, you have no idea what kind of collection this guy had.
Where did
it
go
really
to?
I guess it got split up at auction and whatever, and just, I don't know.
Right.
But he was having financial troubles due to a legal fight, and I think it had to do with Famous Monsters. He did not get along, I guess, with Jim Warren a whole lot.
Hmm.
Yeah, at the end of their relationship. And, I mean, Forry had, like, everything. He had Ultima Futura, which is the robot, speaking of robots, the robot from the Robotrix, I should say, from Metropolis.
I know that one.
He had the original Marcel Delgado models from The Lost World and King Kong. And they were desiccated over the years, you know, like the cotton and stuff that they stuffed it with and had disintegrated. But it was that, those exact props, you know, which is amazing. Mm-hmm. And so all those things were in one place, and it's just a shame. My ex-partner used to bring this up a bit. It was a shame that all these people that wrote to Forry, you know, I won't call them out by name, but all the people in Hollywood that got their careers started by reading that magazine. You know, they loved it. They all sent fan letters. If you got some of the old magazines, and I have them, I mean, the list is a mile long. Couldn't somebody do something so that stuff could have ended up, like his Acker Mansion could have been converted permanently into a museum? I'm sure horror fans mm-hmm. would help fund something like that, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
Because he just had books and masks from, like, the greats. You know, he had stuff from Jack Pierce and just Dick Smith, everything. Mm-hmm. Anything horror and science fiction, he had something from it. Amazing photographs that were extremely rare. Often Famous Monsters was the first place they were seen. Behind the scenes photos, and because he was out there, and his parents, I guess, and his grandparents were very supportive of his interests and took him to the movies. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, he went around trying to meet like people in Hollywood and made the movies. He just had a reputation of being like Mr. Science Fiction, along with the rest of the Bat Pack, which includes Ray Bradbury and Ray Harryhausen.
Mr. Harry Hoosenhausen? That guy?
Yeah.
I like that guy. One of your babes.
Yep. They started a science fiction club, one of the very first in
1939. It wasn't Harry Hoosenhausen that was responsible for gluing the horns on a little lizard, is it?
Hoosenhausen?
I don't think so, although I know that was used in a little bit in 1 million BC. They did the blown-up lizards, you know? No, he did stop-motion animation. I don't think he
right.
That wouldn't have been his idea to do a lizard with fins glued on. Which is not cool for the lizard.
It's not cool. It was the same as in Scrooged when they were going to staple the antlers onto the mouse head. No, that's not cool.
No.
Jesus. Harry Hoosenhausen. Hoosenhausen. Yeah, that guy.
Yeah, he's one of my heroes. Special effects. King.
King.
It was the king.
Oh, I don't see it. I have a horror movie thing, a horror movie book that has Harry Hoosenhausen in it.
Yes.
And I can't remember. I don't know.
You can't have a book without him in it.
What is it? Vampire and the Daughters? No. No. Okay.
I remember getting on the bus, Dave. I remember getting on the bus, Dave, to go downtown. Because the Cleveland Public Library had this book on Harryhausen. It was the only place you could get it at the time. You know what I mean? I didn't know of anywhere where you could get it in the mail, but it was jam-packed with pictures behind the scenes of him, you know, fooling with the models and what have you.
Yeah.
And it was a great book. Detailing his career back when he was doing the little puppet tunes for George Pal.
Oh, my gosh. I love those.
Yeah, he did those fairy tales, like the
they
King
were in
Midas
German or
and
something.
Whatever.
I think they were German. Maybe they were French. Hansel, I don't know. They weren't in English.
No, they were.
Were they in – they were in
they
German?
They were made here in the States. They were.
Oh, the ones I saw were German. It was the Pal puppets, but it was they were in German. It was weird.
Oh, that's weird. Maybe they released it in Germany too.
Mm. That I thought that's where they came from. I was like, ooh.
Nah, it was Ray. And what else did he do early? I'm not sure if he had anything to do with the, because I think early on the Green Giant was supposed to be animated, but oh my god, he looked hideous.
Oh,
I
mean, like, wow. Yeah.
Frighteningly hideous. It just was wrong.
Yeah. Buy my vegetables or I'll kill you. Yeah.
In your sleep, little girl.
In your sleep, I'm a green giant. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not cool. Not good for kids.
All right. Well, I think it's time to bring Jimmy in. I think we're out of time.
I'm pretty wiped out here. So.
Yeah. I did something to my business. Dave, how are you, Dave? I haven't been able to ask you that in a few days.
Getting more movement.
Good.
Good deal.
Well, let's all head to our respective nursing homes and...
That'll work.
Get in our wheelchairs.
I got to go see Nurse Lovely.
You should be so lucky.
My nurse is named
Loveless. What happened? I don't know.
Mine's name's Ratchet. And here we go with Ratchet. Mr. Duran.
Good night. Good night. It's time to say good night. What for this sake but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Horrible up we the thing, and it could think a do. Good night. Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
Good night, Dave.
Good night,
Dale.
Good night, Dale. Good night, John Boy. Woo-hoo!
Kiddies, cooler with the boom boom. The boom boom is fighting your gulati to death over there. So kiddies, cooler with the boom boom. The boom boom is fighting your gulati to death over there. So-